No one's expecting the Chicago Bears to make the playoffs in their first year under Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus. But in order for 2022 to be a success, they need to at least show a direction, a plan, and progress.
You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm here to bring you your daily, in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. You can follow me on Twitter at CoxSports1. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Bears. You can like Locked On Bears on Facebook, join the Locked On Bears Facebook group for even more Bears talk, and make sure you hit that subscribe button on the Locked On Bears YouTube channel as well, to keep up with all of our video podcasts. Thanks for making Locked On Bears your first listen today. We're free and available on all platforms. And on the show today, we have a special guest. Carmen Vitali from the Draft Network will join us to talk about the state of the Bears organization, the team, the direction, the steps forward, the team building process this year. We'll kind of get into, you know, where the level of confidence is as the criticism comes from the outside about building around Justin Fields, the wide receiving core, the offensive line, the retooled defense. We'll kind of look at how the draft class fits into that and where the narratives on the draft class don't always fit in exactly with what we're seeing from the team and how this all sort of projects forward to this season when wins and losses won't necessarily be the way to measure the success of Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus this season, but certainly some of the individual performances of players and some of the less tangible, less measurable types of success will be more critical in 2022. Carmen is great. She's a lot of fun. She's a Chicago girl at heart, and she's been following this team for quite a long time. So let's jump right into it. All right, we are joined now by Carmen Vitali. She is the senior NFL reporter and managing editor of the Draft Network. She's also a Chicago girl and a girl who's been following this team for quite some time, even though she used to work for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but now back in the Windy City here to join us and talk about the Chicago Bears. Carmen, first of all, sort of welcome back. Is it nice to have a little bit more of that freedom? I mean, I'm sure it's super cool to work for an NFL team, but then to sort of now be able to stretch your legs a little bit more and kind of get back to where you grew up a little more?
Yeah, no, I was super stoked about it. I kind of joke that I was a Bears fan in hibernation for the last 6 years. I was fully, don't get me wrong, I was fully entrenched in the Buccaneers organization. They were wonderful to me, and I still have a soft spot in my heart, obviously, but I grew up with the Bucs actually as NFC Central rivals of the Bears. So it was a very weird thing when I first started working there. I was like, it was a very interesting dynamic, but I've never stopped loving my Bears, even if I wasn't very forthright or forthcoming about it, because I belonged to another team for the last 6 years, but now I'm back and I live back in Chicago now, and I'm super excited to be able to flex those muscles and stretch my Bears fandom a little bit.
Sure, and going through a Super Bowl run probably made that a little bit easier down there as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah. There were some rough years before that, let me tell you. I put in my dues for quite a few years before that success came along.
And you put in your dues as a Bears fan too. I mean, you've been through some decades.
Pretty much nothing but dues.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where I want to start, because like we sort of get this feeling like maybe we're in for some dues, at least maybe this season. I mean, there's this feeling of like they don't want to use the word rebuild, but certainly a lot of roster turnover and new regime, of course, and new players really across the starting lineup. So I guess, first of all, where's sort of your confidence level in the organization? And not only just like, not just purely like how good you think they're going to do this year, but like overall, like organizational direction, sort of weighing that long-term mentality with some of the short-term question marks.
Well, I mean, listen, no one wants to use the term rebuild. I mean, I don't even think like the Texans or the Jags or anybody's using the term rebuild. That's just not wired in these guys' brains to think like that necessarily. But that being said, I think the actions being taken by Ryan Poles would reflect that, and kind of like the slow and steady wins the race type of mentality, which honestly, if you want a good foundation, that's what happens. The NFL is just, you know, such a what have you done for me lately league. It's such a, you know, they want immediate returns on things. And a lot of times, I mean, that's not realistic. That's not the recipe for sustained success. So I do think that this is the right move. I think it's going to take some patience, obviously, out of Bears fans and for a fan base that has had nothing but patience for a long time and kind of gone on the roller coaster of getting your hopes up and then realizing that things don't exactly work out how you really wanted them to. Yeah. I appreciate kind of the, listen, we don't really care if you're impatient. We all are, but we're going to do this right. And I appreciate that because I think the last regime, even though for as long as Ryan Pace kept his job somehow, he still was kind of trying that to find a quicker fixes. And that was just, that's not necessarily something when you're trying to build a sustained success. So I am cautiously optimistic. I don't know that I would go full on optimistic because I know better than that.
Well, that's the thing though, right? It's like we have heard, so I mean, not this specific message before, but it does seem like we've kind of gone through the cycle of like, okay, like, you know, you can even date it back, like Mark Trestman comes in. It's like, oh, wow, he's going to build the offense and like they're going to change. And then, of course, like John Fox comes in and he's the Super Bowl winner and he's going to steady the organization. And that, and then, you know, Matt Nagy's like, oh, he's the quarterback guru and he's going to fix the organization. And now it's Matt Eberflus as like a little bit more of that like old school toughness. I mean, do you have, I don't want to say like trouble believing him, but like, I don't know. Do you have some reticence there of just like, yes, it all sounds good, but I mean, we have heard it before, but at the same time, it is a different brand than we've heard before. How do you balance that?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I've given up hope that like the Bears are ever going to become an offensive team, I guess. Like my entire lifetime, they've never had offense to speak of, and they've had success though. You know, paying attention to the defensive side of the ball and fortifying that side and stressing that side of the ball while having a serviceable offense. And I think that that's just the recipe in Chicago for whatever reason. That's what we, you know, that's just how Bears football works. And I think that having another defensive coach coming in is probably a good thing. I'm a huge defensive person, so like I'm probably a little biased because of said defenses that I grew up watching and thinking that, okay, this is kind of how you start a team, but obviously you're going to need to develop who could be a very exciting young quarterback in Justin Fields. And I think that's where then Ryan Poles comes in, the former offensive lineman, to kind of bring up a little bit of a balance. But yeah, I mean, it's still a I'll believe it when I see it type thing. And I think every Bears fan kind of feels like that. But at least they're not doing exactly the same thing that they've been doing the last few years, which is trying to bring in offensive coaches. And, you know, like the Mark Trestman experiment still to this day, like gives me shivers because I'm just like, oh, my God, I blacked it out for a little bit. And then like I get reminded of it. And I'm like, why did we ever think that was going to work?
I'm sure that's hit a little closer to home when you see what Bruce Arians was able to do in person in Tampa Bay and how good of a coach he was there compared to maybe what could have been for your Bears.
I mean, tough. I was definitely on the right side of that breakup for a little bit, or the break. We were on a break, guys.
Today's episode of Locked On Bears is brought to you by our friends at Athletic Greens. They're the makers of AG1. It's a great powdered multivitamin that's so much more than a regular multivitamin. It's got all the different types of nutrients, minerals, and supplements you need to really, for me at least, start my day right. You don't have to take it in the morning, but I really like the way I can kind of have it first thing, really let it absorb into my stomach, and I get 75 high-quality vitamins and minerals, whole foods-sourced superfoods, probiotics, adaptogens, and just that little bit of energy and boost to pick me up throughout the day. Not a guy who takes like drinks coffee or tea or any kind of caffeine or anything like that, but the sort of nutritional boosts that I get from Athletic Greens are great to try and get me through the day, and AG1 tastes good on top of that too. You just take the scoop, mix it in with some water, shake it up, and you feel good. It's good for you. It's great all around, and we're so grateful for their support here on the podcast. To make it super easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NFL Network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/NFL Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. You're back in this with, you know, a time when the team certainly gets a lot of criticism right now for how they're going about this team building process. I mean, you mentioned wanting that sort of defensive focus, and I think that's been where that sort of struggle has been with, like, you want to build around Justin Fields. You want to have the best possible situation for him, but you also want that foundation defensively of you know, like young players in the secondary that they went out and drafted and you know, trying to build that up under Matt Eberflus's sort of, you know, direction. So how do you, I mean, how do you balance that as someone who's ready to accept offensive limits, but also wanting Justin Fields to be as successful as possible?
Right. I mean, it's hard because your shiny toy is on the offensive side of the ball, and that's Justin Fields. So, like, that's where you feel, like, I feel a sense of urgency, perhaps. And then you look at the defensive departures, especially, and you're like, okay, I know in the draft you got the secondary some help, and that's going to be great. I think Kyler Gordon was a fantastic pickup, and the fact that he was there was awesome. And then you also get Jaquan Brisker. Like, those two together, I think, have a very high ceiling, and then especially under a defensive coach who stresses kind of that level of the back end, right? Like, you look at Eberflus's defenses in Indianapolis, and it's all about getting to the ball. You know, I think they have like the second most forced fumbles last year, second most fumble recoveries, you know, the second best interception rate of any defense last season in the regular season. So he obviously stresses plays on the ball. And I think that that's where he has his bread and butter of a defensive, which is a little bit different, right, than the smash mouth defense that the Bears have been used to. So I think I'm even personally like, oh God, like Akeem Hicks is gone. And like, you know, Khalil Mack is gone. And you've got all these pass rushers and stuff that you're like, so wait, Robert Quinn and Akeem Muhammad are the ones that are supposed to step up for Khalil Mack. But then like Khalil Mack wasn't Khalil Mack the last few years. So I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting process to see the defense develop and then to balance it out on the offensive side. I mean, you can't do both at the same time. And I think that you are in this rebuilding period. So you're just going to have to kind of like roll with the punches and just let Justin Fields develop a little bit more, which I don't think is the worst thing in the world either. And I don't think the receivers that he does have are getting enough credit at the same time. I think it's, again, serviceable. I think it's serviceable at this point.
Yeah. Where does that come from for you in terms of the receivers not getting enough credit? What do you like about that group?
I really like, so I've seen Byron Pringle do some things to the Bucs defense when they weren't accounting for him when the Bucs played the Chiefs in that week 12 game in 2020. And just kind of like, I just remember like watching the game being like, who is Byron Pringle? Like, you're obviously like you're accounting for, you know, Tyreek Hill as much as you possibly can, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, all those guys. But like no one was accounting for Byron Pringle. And there were a couple things where I was like, okay. So like I was really impressed with him. And so then when the Bears signed him, I was like, okay, that was a really good pickup. Obviously a very team friendly deal, you know, taking the vet minimum, and you got like a really good talent. And then I don't understand the whole thing behind like, oh, well, Velus Jones is 25 years old. Okay. So, like, 25 year old receivers are fine.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's a 30 something year old going out of college. Like, good Lord, like receivers are like, I don't see much of a difference. And if anything, I think that it gives him a level of maturity as he's entering the league and making that transition from college to the NFL that will help him, if anything else. I don't understand. Like, I know that athletes get old really, really quickly, but like 25 years old is fine. We're fine.
Yeah, it makes all the rest of us feel old if we're calling him an old guy for being 25. But no, I think it feels like so many people have missed like Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus have tried to emphasize this, that like, The COVID year is having this ripple effect in the NFL draft of like,
right.
And I mean, not every single player is older, but like so many of these players, if you're not the top clear-cut first-round type talent, you know, you stayed in that extra year, in some cases like two extra years for some of these guys, depending on what their schools ended up doing. And you're left like it's not like Velus Jones is the only older prospect, but I think you get siloed in for like, well, this team, he's the old guy they drafted, when you can look across the draft class and see plenty of 24-year-olds that were all sort of dinged as red flags of like Bernard Raimann from Central Michigan and so many others that like, oh, he's an older prospect. But when like you're picking from mostly older prospects, like at that point, I don't get the impression that like NFL teams devalued Velus Jones specifically because of his age. You could devalue him because his production numbers were relatively low for a lot of his career, and maybe he's a gadget guy. But I don't know. Do you get the sense, like, especially from the Draft Network perspective, when you're looking at it, we you know, we're so much focused on Velus Jones, but draft wide, I mean, do you see that sort of age trend, or do you see other teams complaining about their old draft prospects being older?
Honestly, I didn't see as much being made about it anywhere else other than Velus Jones. And I was kind of like, yeah, the thing was, not only are there a little bit older prospects, but I mean, you had such a deep draft as a result of all of this. So like, you didn't have the first round pick, and you had to kind of get your guys where you could in the draft. But I think that you have you know, starting caliber talent into the third round, maybe even into the fourth, where you're getting like rotational players and guys that can really make an impact because of the fact that there's so many guys that went back to school. So now you're like backloading 2-3 draft classes into one. And I think that that's a very, and inevitably, yeah, some of these guys are then going to be older because they elected to stay in school or they had to stay in school or whatever it was. But again, it's just, that's one more year of experience. And I think in positions like maybe running back or really high impact positions, or where you're taking a lot of hits and stuff like that, and you kind of wear the tread down a little bit more, maybe that's not the best thing. But like, again, as like we were saying before, wide receivers are plenty good at 25 years old, whether or not they've been in the league 2-3 years or they're just getting into the league. Like, you know, the tread doesn't wear down on those guys. Those guys play into their 30s, you know, every day.
Do you think the criticism of the Bears team building process around Justin Fields, and I think also the draft class got, like, first of all, the draft class thing is funny to me because, like, it seems like all the criticism for them in that draft class was not about who they took. It was just about who they didn't take. And it's like, you can say that they had good players, but then also like didn't take the players you would have wanted them. But like, do you think had they taken, say, like, you know, a George Pickens from Georgia or Sky Moore or one of the wide receivers in the second round, and maybe even also an offensive lineman, and you put a rookie at wide receiver and a rookie at the offensive line, like, do you think even that would have been enough? Like, do you think people would still be saying, ah, well, the wide receiving core is still a second round rookie and still, you know, still another rookie on the offensive line? Like, it just seems like there's so much criticism of like, they should have drafted this way, but then had they drafted that way, would the criticism of the team building process have really changed all that much?
Honestly, I've learned that there's really no winning when it comes to your draft class, because listen, this is all projective, right? We're projecting these guys' success based on what they've done in college without being a pro, without being, you know, having those stressors on their life, without, you know, entering NFL systems. Like, you really just at the end of the day don't know. And so there's really no winning when you're trying to evaluate draft classes immediately after they happen. And I get wanting to prioritize the offense, but at the same time, if you are, again, in the non-rebuild, there is no urgency necessarily to get like these weapons for Justin Fields because you're not going to contend this year. Like, I mean, sure, anything can happen. You never know. But like that, I feel like, again, their focus is on building a really good foundation. And to build a really good foundation, you take the best players that you possibly can. And I think, again, like the value they got for Kyler Gordon, the value they got for Jaquan Brisker, and the fact that, I mean, let's not pretend that they don't need defensive help too.
Right.
So like, it's, I agreed with those decisions. And even at the time though, I was kind of like, all right, this is kind of weird that you're not taking these receivers, but at the same time, it's not like you immediately are one receiver away, or like you said, like one offensive lineman even away from making this whole thing hum and be, you know, one of like the more high powered offenses in the league. Like, it's still going to take some time. And so you've got some time. And so I think that's when you really take best player available. And that was something that was actually a huge philosophy for Jason Light down in Tampa, which I always really appreciated getting an up close look at, is, you know, even when they weren't picking in the bottom of the first round, it was still very much a mentality of, we are going to take the best player on the board, and like need comes second. So if you get a really good value, I mean, that's how like they ended up with Vita Vea. That's how they ended up with, I mean, OJ Howard, who is now a Bill. He didn't really pan out as much as everyone wanted him to, but at the same time, it was like he was sitting there, you had to take him. But I mean, especially with a guy like Vita Vea, it was like, I remember the Bucks got killed for not taking Derwin James. And Derwin James is a great player in his own right. He's battled through a lot of injury issues, but I struggle to think that there was a more impactful player you could have taken there other than Vita Vea, because he has been just the cornerstone for that defense.
So I'm curious then, like, how this comes together for you, like looking ahead to this season, not necessarily in terms of like wins and losses, because I think we all kind of agree, like, not so much pushing for the playoffs, but like, how do you set expectations? Like, what do we want to see? What do we set? What do they need to accomplish this season, if not make the playoffs?
Yeah, I really just think you want to see growth, and you want to see just improvement across the board, and you want to see a plan. Like, you don't want like all of this kind of uncertainty, all this inconsistency that I think, you know, especially towards the end, you saw with Nagy, who was like switching guys in and out and trying different things and whatever like that. Like, you want to maybe like try something in the beginning. You try stuff during training camp. That's the time to experiment. But then you have a plan moving forward. And like, I want to be able to see a tangible plan, and I want to be able to see growth. I want to see Justin Fields get better down the stretch. I want to also have to see him being able to stay in the pocket a little bit more, and having an offensive line that blocks for him. And I want to see some semblance of a run game kind of balance out what Fields has to do himself. And then defensively, you know, I want to see, you know, less and less points from opponents. It can be that simple. But I think a lot of that, it's hard because it's a little bit more intangible, and it's not, you know, as in your face or whatever. But I think that that's, again, this like whole slow and steady wins the race type deal. Like, I've got no other choice but to believe in it at this point.
Yeah. I just wonder, when you have, it seems like a lot of those positions you talked about there, like, you know, you want to see improvement from Justin Fields, and you want to see the offensive line, you know, grow together, and you want to see the wide receivers grow and everything. And it would seem like individually, any of those positions would have a much better time growing if there was more stability around them. But when each of those positions all collectively don't have proven consistency on the others to rely on, I mean, is it, I don't know how to sort of make those things happen at the same time. Like, is it realistic for, you know, young offensive linemen to all improve while also young wide receivers all improve while a young quarterback improves and then a young secondary? I mean, can they all grow and learn together, or do they have enough between them to rely on some kind of foundational steady rock, or can they afford to like have significant lapses, you know, say occasionally in the offensive line or in the secondary with two rookies or in a wide receiver not named Darnell Mooney? I mean, how much can they afford? What kind of wiggle room do they have?
With offensive line especially, you don't, the realistic, or like, you know, just the reality of it is you don't, because if you mess up, it takes one play for your quarterback to be out. Like,
yeah.
I think like you just, that's the biggest thing for me, is just avoiding injury and avoiding like screwing yourself over for the future. So offensive line is one of those things where like you're going to probably need to figure that out first. Now, luckily, you do have a quarterback who's mobile, who can escape situations on his own. And that's why I said, like, I want to see him have to do that less. Like, there was that clip going around on Twitter, and I think, I forget what game it was. Was it against the Chiefs? Or no, the 49ers. It was against the 49ers. And it's Justin Fields backpedaling. Like, he's running around. It was a design run, but, like, he has absolutely no time because the defense is coming crashing down on him. And he's running around, and he somehow escapes every single defender and gets to the end zone.
Yeah.
That's very impressive. It's very impressive. I'm not taking that away from Justin Fields. I don't want him to have to do that all
exactly.
the time.
Yes. Like, that should be the
That's
bonus.
That's my big thing.
Like, that should be, like, in a pinch when you absolutely have to, it's great that he can do that.
Right.
But you don't want to have to ask him to do that regularly.
Or rely on it or whatever. Like, yeah. That was my big thing. I even quote tweeted. I was like, I hope he doesn't have to do this all the time next season. So, like, that's kind of the type of growth I'm talking about. And it's imperative for the offensive line because, like I said, like, their margin for error is so small because it can literally mean the difference between a healthy and a non-healthy quarterback.
Well, I know, like, a lot of the tone around Bears discussion, I don't think necessarily like the tone of our conversation, but the idea is like, yeah, things are going to be a little bit rough, but we'll be patient and get through it. So to buck that a little bit, tell me one player not named Justin Fields that you're most excited to see this season.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm very interested to see, especially with all the defensive departures, like how Robert Quinn kind of comes on, how Eddie Jackson, like if they kind of take the reins now and are like, listen, like we're going to be these leaders that this team so desperately needs on the defensive side of the ball, then bring the young ones along in the secondary, especially. So that's where Eddie would, you know, kind of come in and help out a little bit more. So I'm interested to see kind of how they do that, given that they are kind of the ones that are going to have to step up and lead that side of the ball. So I'll be interested to see that on the defensive side. Offensive side, I mean, I Cole Kmet, you know, I feel like there's so much unfulfilled potential out of him at this point. And you see glimpses and you see the flashes and you see, but we're going to have to see what Luke Getsy does with his tight ends. I mean, guys like Robert Tonyan have had really good success in his offenses, you know, up in Green Bay. And if Cole can kind of play that role, I mean, he could become a pretty big factor here in the offense. And I think that that's where, you know, offenses also have to kind of make their bread and butter with guys that are versatile like that. And you see these pass catching tight ends, the rise of like the pass catching tight end at this point being acting really as another receiver. It's a way to get another receiver on the field. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Those are my guys.
Something to look forward to this season when double digit wins maybe isn't. So Carmen, really appreciate you joining us and coming out with us. Let everybody know, you know, where they can find your work and follow you on social media.
Yep, I'm at Carmiev, C-A-R-M-I-E-V, on Twitter and Instagram. You'll start seeing more and more Bear stuff coming out on my social handles and the stuff that I'm writing about. I still obviously have a lot of stuff coming out about the Buccaneers and the league as a whole. The Bears now have a soft spot, and now I can finally comment on them. And it's been great. It's been very freeing.
She is managing editor and senior NFL reporter at the Draft Network, formerly with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Carmen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Carmen Vitale from the Draft Network for joining us on the podcast today. If you enjoyed our conversation, make sure you hit that subscribe button on however you're listening, or if you're watching the podcast on YouTube. That's going to be the best way to keep up with all of our daily in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis for you right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We are your team every day. Probably hear from Carmen at least a few more times, I think, through the rest of the offseason. You might hear her voice around the podcast a little bit more as she's back in Chicago and getting back into the Chicago media swing of things. We'll also try and get a few other different types of guests on throughout this long off season. The Locked On Bears podcast isn't going anywhere, even when OTAs are over, and even when, you know, Bears news is few and far between. We can be that oasis in your off season desert. So I hope you'll keep tuning back in, and I hope that as a result, the Locked On Bears podcast makes it that much easier for you to bear down.